I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Sports, sports, sports. Kansas City's athletic scene is experiencing some excitement right now, and it's not all about the Chiefs. The Royals made major news, too, with the sale of the team to John Sherman and Associates. Today, I sit down with Sherman to discuss his goals in leading the team. There's revenue streams to talk about, as well as just how much he's willing to spend on salaries and whether he's interested in that downtown baseball stadium. Then, KCUR sports contributor Greg Eklund will offer analysis on my conversation with Mr. Sherman, as well as take us through some sports highlights from 2019. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. The Kansas City Royals have new owners. We know that now. What we don't know in any sort of precise way is how much John Sherman and his team of investors are willing to spend on players to ensure a return to winning baseball in this town. And how interested is he really in a downtown baseball stadium? John Sherman, the new lead owner of the Kansas City Royals, joins me here in the studio. And John, it's nice to have you. Congratulations on your purchase.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be here.
And just a quick note, John and Marnie Sherman, as well as several of the other members of the new ownership group, are supporters of KCUR. You know, John, you've been a part owner of the Cleveland Indians for a number of years now. Has this new reality sunk in yet that you're the lead owner now of your hometown baseball team?
I think so. I was telling somebody recently, I kind of go back and forth between pinching myself and then also focused on the responsibility it is to the fans, to the community, to the players and coaches in our organization.
It's both things at once.
Right. Right.
You know, was buying an interest in the Royals a long-time ambition, or was the plan to eventually buy control of the Cleveland Indians?
Well, I mean, you'd always rather do this in your hometown. I talked to David Glass about 5 years earlier. I didn't think he was going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
He actually helped me get the opportunity with Cleveland. It was a great learning opportunity for me. And then when David decided to sell the team, he called me earlier this year. And long story short, we put the deal together, and now we're here.
He called you while you were in spring training.
Correct.
You got a phone call from Bentonville, Arkansas, and you wondered whether it was a legit call or not.
Right, right.
So he left you a voicemail, and then you called him back,
I did
right?
call him back, right. And it was a surprise, very much a surprise.
How did you react to that? What did you do in those moments after Mr. Glass began to suggest that maybe you should think about buying the Royals?
Well, his comment was, I don't know if my timing is good with the Indians, but you'd be my first choice. We're going to sell the team. And that was a big surprise to me. So it was a relatively short conversation. I asked him if he would refrain from taking the next step until he heard back from me.
Mm-hmm.
I actually took a long walk around the stadium, kept it to myself for a while, just a lot of had to think through it. The wheels were spinning. But long story short, called him back a little bit later, talked to my partners in Cleveland, got the support of the commissioner, and we put the deal together.
Emotionally, what was that like, that walk around the stadium? Were you revved up? Were you just wondering what you were getting yourself into here?
It was a confluence of things.
I
was excited on one hand, but I thought there was a lot of complexity about it, you know, yeah. At least initially.
Sure.
It took a while to kind of work through. But I was, you know, had the extraordinary support from my partners in Cleveland. The commissioner's office was support. I think we all thought collectively this would be good for baseball if we could do it.
And, because why?
Well, I think local ownership is what the league wants. We don't have it everywhere, but the local ownership is what the league wants. And we have what has surprised me a little bit about this process is couple things. I knew this team was important to the community, but now that people talk to me about it, it's even more important than I thought. And when we were putting together a group of partners, and these are business people that tend to be hard-nosed about things, and they want this to be a good investment, but 100% of them allocated value to what this team and what this organization does for the community.
So what does that mean? How does that translate to the players on the field, John? Does that mean that the owners are all in when it comes to winning baseball, or are they all in when it comes to getting earning a profit off their investment?
I think you want to do both if you can. But the reality of economics and small markets, sometimes you make money, sometimes you don't make money, but we really want to win for the fans of this community. And you have to – it's a game. I mean, one of the things that is great about the Four Seasons in Cleveland, most of the time when people buy these, they're kind of reading the owner's manual on the way in the door. Mm-hmm. So I had exposure to a very good organization in a small market, and that was successful while I was there. So we certainly plan to win, and we, as we've said before, we'd like to do it on a sustainable basis.
And again, Mr. Glass was pretty instrumental in sort of giving you sort of the lay of the land when it came to owning a baseball team, right?
Absolutely.
What this world was all about. What surprised you about what he said?
About what David said?
Yeah.
You know, I don't think I was surprised a lot about it because I'd had the experience in Cleveland. What I've been surprised about is how important he felt that this team was to Kansas City. And to his credit, you know, he could have auctioned off this team, brought in
absolutely
nothing against New York hedge fund managers, but he could have got multiple bids on this. He focused on he thought I would be a good person to pull this together. He cared very much about Kansas City, just like the commitment that he made to you and Kauffman. Mm-hmm. I think this was an opportunity for him to pass that baton on.
You know, Sam Mellinger, the sports columnist for The Star, had an interesting column the other day about you and your ownership group. He sort of raised this idea of whether the goal here is, to use the word you just used, John, is sustainability, meaning winning close to 90 games every year, or is the goal to win it all and go all in for a year or two, with the risk being that you're going to decline and lose a greater number of games for a few years before you can build it back up again? Where are you there?
I think that's situational, Steve. I think we want to build a team that can win and have sustainable success. And for me, that means playing meaningful games in August and September, having a chance to get into the tournament. Once you're in the postseason, anything can happen, as we proved here, particularly in 14, but in 15 as well.
Right.
But also, when you have a nucleus, I think it's time to go for it. In 2016 in Cleveland, as an example, we started the year with an $82 million payroll. We had really good pitching. We were good. And at the deadline, we picked up Andrew Miller, Coco Crisp, Brandon Guyer. And we went to the seventh game of the World Series. In that offseason, we signed Edwin Encarnacion, which was the largest free agent contract. And we've probably had our best team in 2017, but in baseball, you know, the Yankees knocked us out in the first round. But I think it's a balance between trying to put a competitive product on the field and then going for it when you really have that big opportunity.
And yet, as you know way better than I do, Cleveland has been criticized roundly in recent years for not investing enough in players, again, against the dynamics of a small market there. Yeah. How did you react to that?
I think you have to, you know, the economics of baseball in a small market, you have to spend when the opportunity is there.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I think the fact that fans are saying that is because they're passionate about the team and they care, and that's certainly better than the alternative.
And you're finding that out now, how much they care, right?
Absolutely. In fact, I told somebody last night, you know, most of the time when you do an acquisition like this, people will say congratulations. You know, but then that's I hear that from the other owners. When I walk around town here, go to lunch, go to the grocery store, people say thank you.
Is that right?
Yeah. They don't say congratulations. They say thank you. And it just tells me how important this team is to the community. And, you know, I think this team wasn't going anywhere, right? But I think the fact that we have this local ownership group, it just shows that we're assuring the long-term presence of Major League Baseball in Kansas City.
John Sherman, the new principal owner of the Kansas City Royals, is my guest. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. If you have questions for John, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. You know, the Royals lost 103 games in 2019. They won just 59. What's your reaction to that?
First of all, I wasn't responsible.
Had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the team, I mean, I think I would probably defer, when you ask for the reasons for that, I would defer those questions probably to Dayton Moore.
Now, I'm wondering about how you felt about your hometown team losing that many games, John.
Well, it's not something that we want to do long term. Mm-hmm. And I think Dayton, we got with this new manager, Mike Matheny, we've got some really good young prospects in the minor system. We got a core nucleus of position players up at the major league level, and we're gonna work very, very hard to improve that team and make progress toward that goal of competing for a championship on behalf of our fans.
You know, baseball has released the names of your ownership group. What hasn't been released is the percentage of ownership that you and each member of the group has here. What percentage of the group do you own, John?
You know, I think that's a private matter. I would just tell you that I'm the largest shareholder by far. In Major League Baseball, they designate a controlling shareholder, and so I'm responsible to Major League Baseball for the operations of the club.
You've also said that some of the ownership group you know very well and others less so. Does actor Eric Stonestreet fall into the category of less so?
Well, I don't know. It depends on how you – I've seen him a lot more than some of the guys I know on the big screen. But, no, I actually got to know Eric more recently. But mm-hmm. He's a guy that very impressive and good business mind. He loves Kansas City, loves the Royals and the Chiefs, and he's a great ad. But also really understands the game and was understands the business aspect mm-hmm. of baseball as well.
Are you allowed to keep your ownership stake in the Indians, or do you have to divest as you go forward with the Royals?
Have to divest. Major League rules can't own two teams, and we're in the process. We're running a process right now to divest that stake.
Mm-hmm. Bottom line, should the Royals and the fans here expect to see higher payrolls in the John Sherman era?
I think we're going to do what we need to do to win, and whether or not payrolls go up or down, I think it depends on the nucleus, but we're going to do what it takes to put a competitive team on the field.
What about pursuing the best pitchers in baseball? I can't help but notice a Steven Strasburg just signed, Gerrit Cole. Can the Royals compete for players like that?
Well, I think we'd have to sell them the team to get one of those guys. And, that's a short list, right? It's a very short list of people and big market teams that can pay those prices.
Yeah.
That would be more risk than we should tolerate here. What we've got to do as a small market team, we have to evaluate talent well and draft well, develop our players well, sign them to long-term contracts when we recognize talent early. And then when the time is right, we'll spend money to compete for a championship.
I can't help but wonder, what does it say about a professional sports league where only a handful of teams can afford to pursue the best players? I mean, how is that fair?
Well, I think the league, we don't have it. I think we're one of the only leagues without a salary cap. But we have other things that help small market teams, revenue sharing, competitive balance tax, they call it the luxury tax. So those teams tend not to stay above that in spending year after year after year because it's very punitive if you do. Mm-hmm. So there are some things that – and then we also get some advantage. In addition to revenue sharing, we get a competitive balance draft round. For example, I think we're drafting – we've got the number 4 pick this year, but then we also have the number 3 pick in the competitive balance, which is a special round between rounds 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm. And you're satisfied with the way that balance plays out?
Well, I'd like it to be better, but I think the league, I think the commissioner in the league is, and all the owners collectively, the 30 of us, have done a good job making sure that we've got a good product overall. But it's definitely more challenging for the small markets to compete. But as I think we proved in 14 and 15 here, you can do it. As we've proved in Cleveland, we're doing it year after year, been in the postseason.
I can't help but note that the Boston Red Sox this last spring had an opening day roster payroll of $213 million. The Kansas City Royals had a payroll of $83 million. Your former team, the Indians, had an opening day payroll of $107 million. So again, the Red Sox two or three times as much as what the Royals have. And again, that just sort of boggles my mind sometimes.
Well, it's certainly a disadvantage, but it's one that I think small market teams that are, you know, the owner, the president of the Dodgers told me it's better to be smart than rich, but it's really good if you're smart and rich. But if you're just smart, and I think we have models that have proven that. I don't, there's a talking point, you know, in Cleveland, at least through 2018, we'd won more games than anybody else in the American League.
In recent years, yeah.
And we did it over that five-year period, spending about $500 million less cumulatively than the Red Sox, as an example. So it can be done, and I think if you're in a small market, you got to have really, really bright people. You got to have the right leadership, and you got to go. There's something extra you got to do to win.
Kathleen has tweeted us, John, asking this, would love to hear about his take on the Royals minor league system, paying the minor leaguers a living wage, and if he's allowed to comment on the current negotiations about contracts, contracting in the minor leagues.
Specifically with the players?
I guess
that's
what you're saying.
I really can't comment on that.
With the teams, I guess.
Yeah, I really can't comment. I do know that there's a very earnest set of negotiations underway right now.
You're hopefully about to get a new TV contract that'll be worth what some expect to be about $55 million a year. That's about double what it is now, but still one of the lowest in baseball. What do you expect to be able to announce that deal, John? Is that coming anytime soon?
I think that should be pretty soon. Yeah, I'm not saying any day before the end of the year, but we should be able to announce that in the not too distant future.
Are you happy with where you're going to wind up with that?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we're a small market, so they value these things. I mean, you're in the media business based upon households, but our Kansas City fans are incredibly engaged. I mean, by all
one measures, of the highest viewerships, you know, per capita or something in the league. I forget the
highest
exact
viewerships, rate. And there's actually a rating that I think Nielsen employs for measuring fan engagement, attended, watched, or listened to in a market. And the Royals fans are fourth in all of sports. And it's like the Packers and the Steelers and the Cardinals and then the Royals. And those first two are nation states, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, the Chiefs are in that top group as well. So very engaged fan base, and I think the Royals in particular.
What do you attribute that to, given the fact the Royals have had some success in recent years, but also a lot of failure, too?
Yeah, I think
that's breathtaking.
You know, I'm not sure I can tell you what I allocate that to. I think, but I do think that even though we talk about the 50 years and we've had some ups and downs, until the Nationals won the World Series this year, we're the only team in that 69 expansion class to win a World Series. Hmm. And we've been to four and we've won two. And while we've had our ups and downs, this is a proud and storied franchise. And I think we need to remember that, and that. That tradition will, I think, help us win on the field again.
How much of a difference will it make for the team to have that extra TV revenue, John?
From the
new contract.
I think it's important. Mm-hmm. That's been a long time coming. I can't remember what year exactly that was when we did that, but it wasn't a very good time. I think we merit more than we've kind of had to navigate with those. But that'll be meaningful that we get back to really market for our team.
You've also said that you'll have an advisory board that you'll seek feedback from as you go through this experience. Who's on that board?
Well, it's the major investors. I really don't want to get specific about that, but it's the major investors within that group.
Yeah. You've seen the success of the Indians and the Cleveland Cavaliers during the LeBron James era in that city and what it has meant for downtown Cleveland. Given that, how interested are you in building a new stadium downtown?
Well, I think that's an interesting question. We have a great situation where we are. Royal Stadium's a great place to play baseball. But there's a lot of people interested in this. I think there's a belief that you can create more economic impact with baseball because of the 81 games a year in a denser area, and certainly that's the trend around the country. So I think I would just say we're in listening mode, but there's a lot of things to think about relative to whether or not we can make that happen, thinking about the needs of the club, our fans, and the community.
But you like the idea.
I like the idea if we can make it work, but there's just a lot of work to do before we got there.
On the other hand, I should point out the Atlanta Braves left the downtown area in their market for prime real estate out on the outskirts of the city, and the team actually controls a lot of the real estate development taking place outside the ballpark. That's kind of a different model. Does that hold any appeal for you?
Moving to the suburbs?
Yeah, right? and then controlling some of the development that would come up around the ballpark.
You know, I think if the team could participate in some of the development around the ballpark, I think that would help us as a business and again, give us the opportunity to be more competitive. You know, St. Louis has Ballpark Village next to it. That's been good for them. We were just in Arlington for the Major League Baseball meetings, and the development around the new Arlington Stadium is really quite phenomenal.
Is the team able to capitalize on that?
In Texas?
In Texas.
Yeah. I think they're participating. If you think about it, you're bringing 30,000 people or whatever it is, 81 nights a year. So those are team efforts, public-private partnership, but the team certainly benefits from the development around a stadium.
Have you even taken a look at some of the potential downtown sites that have been kicked around in the media so much?
I've seen some of the work that certain people have done, yes.
Can you do anything like to further develop the Truman Sports Complex with private businesses or even businesses that the Royals would have a stake in? Is that even an option going forward?
You know, I think that's a difficult one. I mean, I think we've been out there. How long have we been out there?
Yeah, you know. 50 years.
And it hasn't happened. And so I think it has to be, while you can influence some of it, when you're in denser areas, there tends to be more organic growth around a baseball stadium as well.
I should note the Royals' lease with the Jackson County Sports Authority expires in 2031. Is there any timeline yet on when it comes to studying what the future of the Royals might look like when it comes to the lease and a potential new ballpark?
Well, we'd certainly have to be several years ahead of that. And what's happening right now is that there are people in the community studying this, you know, without our help, and we're certainly listening to those people.
Yeah. A lot of things to think about here.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah. Is the idea, as you look at the ball team, John, is the idea to keep players through their contracts or to unload them before they expire for other players? I mean, baseball has sort of toggled back and forth between both.
Well, I think you make decisions that are in the best interest of the club long term. So it really is situational.
Yeah. What are you working on right now when it comes to the team? It's wintertime. Spring training hasn't begun. What are you doing?
Well, it's my third week. So
I was going to say, yeah.
What I've been trying to do is spend time in small group meetings at the stadium, both on the business side and the baseball side, to get to know the people and get a little flavor for the culture. That's been great for me, both getting to see the talent that we have and then also letting them get to know me a little bit.
Yeah. Well, John, again, what a pleasure to have you here. Congratulations, and I guess I'll join the rest of Kansas Cityans and say thanks for buying the team. It's great to have you, and we wish you all the best. We'll be rooting for you hard.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's John Sherman, the new principal owner of the Kansas City Royals. After a short break, KCUR sports contributor Greg Eklund will join us to talk the year that was in Kansas City sports. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Go to kcur.org/Kraske and sign up for exclusive highlights from our show delivered to your inbox each Monday. It's called Kraske Off Mic, and you'll get insights from me and input from the entire Up to Date team. Don't miss out. Subscribe at kcur.org/Kraske. Tomorrow on the show, KC Pet Project's new animal shelter is set to open in January. Find out what the new multi-million-dollar facility has to offer. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, we're joined now by KCUR sports contributor Greg Eklund, who's going to review the year in sports that 2019 was. And Greg, always good to have you here. Welcome back.
Good to be here, Steve. Thank you.
You just listened to our interview with new Royals owner John Sherman. I mean, what stood out to you? Any surprises? Anything that caught your ear?
Well, acknowledging a couple of things was most significant to me. One, to be specific about the timeline of the Truman Sports Complex, everything's been out there for almost 50 years. 1973 was the first year that the football and baseball stadium had opened out there. And what we see is what we see. As far as any further development out there, John Sherman used the word difficult. And as we have seen, really nothing has happened beyond the sports complex because of the confluence of the layout out there between the interstate to the north and the other things that surround the area. So it was also significant that he used the phrase "likes the idea" when you asked him about the possibility of a downtown stadium one day in the future of Kansas City.
I mean, no question, a lot of things would have to happen to make that come about, maybe even including a bi-state tax. You know, you begin to play out those dominoes there. I was also struck by the fact, Greg, that when I told him and pointed out the Royals had lost 103 games last year, and if he wants to, what his reaction was to that, I didn't get the impression he was too happy with it.
No, I don't think he'd be too happy. I don't think the present management and even previous owner was happy about that. But that's one of those things that I don't think they shoot for some of those, for a season to be that bad. But John Sherman knows, as well as anyone from being involved with the Indians, that sometimes even when you try to be competitive in August and September, because of unforeseen circumstances that happen through the year, it's going to change the nature of a team's destiny in a certain season.
Well, you know, and just speaking on behalf of a lot of people, I'm glad he's bought the team. He strikes me as just a great guy.
Well,
and just a real decent guy in it for the right reasons.
It's the best thing for Kansas City, and I think it's also a good time to acknowledge what David Glass did do for the team as far as looking over Kansas City's future for the long haul. I think he was criticized a lot for having his offices down in Arkansas, but I think it's underappreciated how much good that David Glass did around Kansas City and how much he was in for the long haul about the franchise's future.
And how much he worked to ensure that the franchise was going to stay right here out of the Truman Sports Complex.
Yes.
Okay. Let's look at some of the year's highlights in sports. We just have a few minutes here, Greg. Let's begin with the Royals. And I guess one big announcement was Ned Yost's retirement.
Yes. What will Ned Yost do in 2020?
I want to just spend the summer at home, relaxing, and then, I'll look at it when we get down the road, But, I've got, you guys know, I got grandkids, I got family, I just want to kind of go home and enjoy my family for the first time in a long, long time.
That means he's not managing the Kansas City Royals next summer.
Mike Matheny will be in the dugout next year with a slightly different coaching staff, but Ned Yost will be down in Georgia enjoying his family and will not be a part of the Royals in 2020.
How will Mike Matheny be different than Ned Yost?
I guess we're going to find that out because we're going to see if Mike Matheny is different from the manager that he was with the St. Louis Cardinals, because it didn't end well with the St. Louis Cardinals.
Although he had some successful years
there. He did have some success, yes.
There's a certain controversy attached to Mike Matheny's appointment as the manager of the Royals. What is that controversy?
Well, on whether he's, and this is going to be the big key for the Royals, because he's got the young prospects who are going to be coming up and knocking on the door for some major league experience, on whether he can handle those young players, because he was largely working with a group of veterans when he was with the Cardinals. Mm.
Clearly the Royals think that he can do just that.
Yeah. And Matheny has spent the last year looking over the system, so he knows what's coming up through the Royals system.
Okay, crazy question, but got to ask it. Again, the Royals lost 103 games last year. Do you expect them to lose that many this year?
Well, I think there is still so much to be determined between now and the start of spring training, because there are so many players that are out on the market, unsigned and unaccounted for. It would be really difficult to project anything because, we know what they have coming back, and there's not a large change from what they had last year when they lost more than 100 games. But I think there are going to be a series of moves made in the next 2 to 3 weeks to give us a better idea.
Safe to say that pitching is priority one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's move to the Kansas City Chiefs. They just missed going to the Super Bowl, as we all sort of remember don't want to remember.
In Atlanta last year, there was one big announcement, but it was without the rest of the team.
I am here to honor excellence. And the 2018 AP Most Valuable Player is...
Patrick Mahomes!
That's actor Paul Rudd making that announcement,
That announcement. Of course, the preference would have been to have the teams down there, the Chiefs down there as a team playing for the Super Bowl. It didn't happen when they lost the AFC Championship at home against the New England Patriots, but it's an ongoing story of 2019 because now the Chiefs are marching toward that possibility again. Maybe this time they'll get to the Super Bowl.
How did Pat Mahomes' 2019 season compare to his 2018 MVP season?
He's been hurt a little bit, nicked up here and there, missed a couple of games. Matt Moore, the backup quarterback, had to play a couple of games in his place, did very well while he was in there as Pat Mahomes' replacement. He hasn't thrown as many touchdown passes, but in many ways, I think Pat Mahomes has played better because he has learned how to be more efficient and I think a wiser quarterback in the way he moves the team down the field.
Here's a question. Can the Chiefs get past the Baltimore Ravens, a team that's also in its conference, to get to the Super Bowl this year? The Ravens would be the big obstacle, it seems to me, like the New England Patriots were a year ago.
You started out that statement with, here's the question, because that is the question. It looks like the AFC Championship may well go through the city of Baltimore, and it could be the Chiefs and the Ravens in the AFC Championship game.
We beat them, obviously, earlier in the season, but that was a very different time in the development of the Ravens' star quarterback.
Well, we got a sample of what Lamar Jackson could do at that time, but the coach, John Harbaugh, made some uncharacteristic fourth down calls in that game that I'm not sure he would do if he was presented with the same situation on a rematch.
The Chiefs got a new player this week, Terrell Suggs.
That was a good pickup for the Chiefs, especially because they lost Okafor, who was one of their developing defensive players who was making an impact on the defense. And to have a guy like Suggs, who's a veteran on this team, I think will help for the last two games and into the playoffs.
Okafor, and there's another lineman who's been injured. Are they out for the season?
Yes, they are. So,
okay.
Yeah, so they're done. And so, yeah, but the defense actually has come together over the last month or so. It has played on a markedly better level. So that's the hope, and that's what the Chiefs went out and did in the offseason to make the outcome different, perhaps, this year in the AFC Championship game.
I just got 30 seconds, Greg. Just one other quick note I noticed, and it didn't get a lot of attention in town. Mike Moustakas, the former third baseman for the Royals, went to the Milwaukee Brewers, just signed a whopper of a contract with the Cincinnati Reds.
Finally got the multi-year deal he was looking for. He was signed to a couple of one-year contracts with the Milwaukee Brewers and had been knocking on the door, put together solid numbers. I think maybe even play second base instead of third base.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Wouldn't that be something? That's KCUR sports contributor Greg Eklund. Greg, always great to have you here. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Merry Christmas.
As the old cliche goes, it's not whether you win or lose, but how you play the game. Yet sometimes, as fans know, sports is about much more than just the game. Commentator Victor Wishna sheds a little light in this year-end edition of A Fan's Notes.
My friends, we are living in dark times. I mean that literally. As we count down to the winter solstice this week, each day is briefer than the last. Darkness arrives early and often. It's no wonder, then, that 'tis the season when many traditions, whether by candle or uncoiled cord of colored bulbs, try to cast some light. With that in mind, for the last Fans Notes of 2019, I thought I'd share a few sparks, moments of light that might have gone unnoticed this year, that may seem to have nothing to do with the perception of sports, and yet are what it's all about. For example, when you watch the Chiefs game this Sunday, and the camera zooms in on quarterback Patrick Mahomes' golden right arm, look closely. You'll see more than a handful of colorful rubber bracelets, each one a tribute to a different child battling a rare form of cancer or another debilitating illness or injury. It's not just wrist service. Last month, Mahomes' newly formed foundation, 15 and the Mahomies, really that's what it's called, presented 15 checks to 15 children's charities for $15,000 each. On the other side of the state, The St. Louis Blues made their first Stanley Cup in franchise history even more meaningful by dedicating it to Layla Anderson, an 11-year-old superfan who suffers from a rare autoimmune disease. She was there to raise the cup following the Blues' Game 7 win, and after the team inscribed Layla on their diamond-coated championship rings, they showed up at her house to give her one of her very own. Sure, superstars bearing gifts will garner headlines, but you probably haven't read or heard much about Ann Murphy, a Kansas City police officer and former college soccer player who founded her own FC, that's football club, to keep teens off the street and out of trouble. In just a few years, she has coached and mentored hundreds of kids and also set them up with weekly tutoring sessions, campus visits, and college scholarships. Next month, United Soccer Coaches will honor her with its award for extraordinary achievement beyond the sport. Then there's the story of Maya Kretzer of McPherson, Kansas. For 4 years, she fought to make girls wrestling an official high school sport, grappling against a mindset decades after Title IX that still questions if women and girls can or should contend for the same glory. In April, just weeks before Kretzer graduated, the High School Activities Association voted overwhelmingly to make Kansas the 15th state to recognize a championship in girls wrestling. Because it's not whether you win or lose, but whether you get to compete at all. As Kretzer told the Washington Post, with your wins and losses, you get to reflect and try to develop yourself into something better. The struggles in wrestling help you with the struggles outside of wrestling. To me, knowing what's most valuable is the mark of any MVP. I love this game, Patrick Mahomes told the Kansas City Star, and I want to put everything I have into it. But there are bigger things in this world other than just the game of football. On Sunday, the sun will set on the shortest day of the year. The first night of Hanukkah and Christmas week will begin, and the Chiefs and Bears will kick off at Soldier Field. So whatever your traditions, here's wishing you a season of joy and a postseason of laughter and love and light. And may all your games be merry and bright. Lighting up all over the world. Lighting up every boy and every girl. Gonna rise like a phoenix and shine like a pearl. Lighting up the world. Victor Wishna is a writer, editor, and sports fan. He lives in Leawood. Coming up, your weekend to-do list with Brian McTavish and Spencer Hardwick. Bomber suckers with precision. My intent is to get with you with S and double OP. Dog, my closest homies, it's so cold we dispose our foes. Show me up. I keep my hand on my gun because they got me on the road. Oh, that's my theme song. In case you are a contributor, Brian McTavish is here. He follows and writes about pop culture. With him, Spencer Hardwick, founder and curator of Wire KC Weekender. They join us here in the studio each week with ideas for your weekend. Hi, gentlemen. How are you?
Happy holidays, Steve.
Happy holidays, yeah. How's everybody?
Hey, I'm great.
What do we have here, Spencer?
Well, nothing brings in the holidays quite like Snoop Dogg and Tupac, so I thought that if you take a cursory look, if you were to go to the Kansas City Wikipedia page, you wouldn't have to go down too far to realize that there has been, in the past, some gangster influence in terms of what Kansas City has been about.
I'd say that's right.
And so Union Station is actually pulling back the curtain a bit this weekend on Saturday morning. They say, grab your chopper, hop on the bus, and you'll be immersed in a melodramatic look at mob homes and hangouts, turf wars, and infamous crimes. It's a side of the city that we don't really see on brochures, but it really does explain some things from our city politics historically, even 18th and Vine.
So it's a gangster tour you're talking
about
here.
It's a tour, so you're going to get to see some, you know, how mobsters and how gangsters kind of moved about the city, what some of their quarters were look like. There's even, so I've heard, it's a rumor, that there's still some bullet holes, remnants around Union Station.
Outside the station,
for the massacre. So
yeah.
10 a.m. Saturday, Union Station, 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Great history tour, but also just a little gangster party.
So it's a one-time deal.
It happens, it's recurring, but this is I think the next time is in a few months.
Okay, yeah. Sounds good. I wanna go to school.
That's called punk rock. KCUR's Frank Morris is a huge devotee, and we're talking Radke here, right, Brian?
I didn't know Frank was a punker.
Huge, huge.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that's why he looks so lively.
There you go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, it is indeed Radke. They are headlining the bill along with Many Colored Death and Hot Suede. Sounds like a great lineup. 8 o'clock Friday at Record Bar.
Wow.
Radke, the KC area punk rock brother act, actually from St. Joseph, Missouri. This is the song called Rock and Roll Homeschool by Radke. It was inspired.
What it's about? Yeah.
That's what it's about if you want it to be. Yeah, Rock and Roll Homeschool. It's about jumping up and down as fast as you can,
yes,
I think.
Yes, it is.
Anyway, this tune was inspired by their very own homeschooling experience, which included a lot of listening to classic rock, punk, R&B, soul, pop, psychedelic, etc. records. Radke consists of, yes, the three homeschooled brothers from St. Joe. You got bassist Isaiah Radke, drummer Solomon Radke, and then D. Radke, who holds forth on lead vocals and ferocious guitar. They've been around for almost 10 years now.
Wow.
They played their first show in 2011, their first show opening for veteran ska, punk, funk, metal, what have you band Fishbone. Pretty cool gig. Since then, it's been a super sweet trajectory for Radke. Ongoing critical praise, shows that have taken them around the world from Japan to England to Kansas City.
Wow.
They have a new album. This makes no sense on the air. I'll try to say the name of the album. No Strange Cats, .. Letter P, letter A, letter W. Sounds kind of strange to me, but hey, rock yourself silly Friday night at Record Bar.
I hear a little jazz there, Spencer. I hear a little hip-hop. What do we got going on?
Absolutely. So staying on the music wave, the future of music and even the present of music really is fusion. So on Friday, similarly, if you want to turn the dial a few notches, you'll find that there's a jazzy hip-hop Christmas going on at the Blue Room. So we all know the Blue Room, 18th and Vine, one of the more historic jazz centers in the city. They're now combining it with a little bit of hip-hop. And this is headlined by great musicians from around the city, Kemet the Phantom, Kadesh Flow, Marcus Lewis Big Band, and Bobby Watson. There should be something for everybody, from the new school hip-hop guys to the old school jazz heads. I'm really interested in exploring the nuances and intricacies of how these two genres mesh. And the sample that we're hearing right now is actually a pretty good sample of what you can anticipate on Friday.
Okay, and Bobby Watson's going to be there too, eh?
Yes, so throw all that together with a little bit of Christmas twist, and you have a can't-miss show. So after you go to Radke, maybe sidle on over to 18th and Vine and get
ease back a little bit.
Exactly.
It sounds so chill-worthy.
Jazzy hip-hop Christmas at the Blue Room, 8:30 Friday night. Look around. What do we have here besides? That's the Bangles,
right? Did you just say besides the Bangles?
No.
Let's get them on the horn.
That's the Bangles. They're here. They're playing the music, but they're not here.
I played that especially for you.
Your
secret Bangles fan is coming out.
There you go.
Okay. It's a hazy shade of winter out there, right, guys?
Yep.
That's the song.
Yep.
But it's more than the song. It's about this weekend's KC Winter Solstice Celebration. It starts at 8 o'clock Saturday night at Davies Uptown Ramblers
That's
Club.
That's right. It's a winter solstice, isn't it?
It
That's
is.
Right.
Technically, yes. Sunday. That's the day where it's like the most hours of dark.
Yes.
But here's the thing.
And then the light comes. Thank goodness.
Yes. The light.
It's still dark at like 7:30 in the morning.
Go to the light. Anyway, this event, Saturday night, Davies Uptown, Winter Solstice Celebration, it holds the promise of a clarifying mental moment, guys, when the days, as we say, begin to grow longer, that when the light slowly but surely beckons to spring and summer, that there is the opportunity for self-renewal and, yes, perhaps even self-transformation.
Well, that is just poetic.
Sounds good to you?
Yes.
Okay, so find out for yourself with music, dancing, poetry, life painting, that would be interesting,
oh, wow,
and regenerative, if you're lucky-minded, product vendors, all at the KC Winter Solstice, I can't even say it, I'm so excited, celebration, starting at 8 o'clock Saturday night at Davies Uptown. It's a chance to reinvent yourself.
Okay.
Right?
And you can do it this weekend.
Well, yeah, you can try.
Okay, Saturday, Davies Uptown Ramblers Club.
Yeah. Heading down.
Let's talk whiskey, Spencer.
Absolutely. I wanted to include something for the more sophisticated crowd. And so we're going to go with a whiskey tasting.
Oh, you're speaking, to them.
Absolutely.
Danny
absolutely.
Alexander, our producer, is pointing to herself.
Absolutely.
For whiskey pure sophistication, don't you know?
Fun fact, my wife is a huge whiskey / bourbon. And
really?
Do you know what the warm sensation is called when you drink a lot of whiskey or bourbon particularly?
The buzz.
It's called the Kentucky Hug.
Oh,
so hopefully everyone
right?
can experience like some sort of derivative of the Kentucky Hug this Friday, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Well, there'll be tons of whiskeys on tap. We're talking Elijah Craig, Tomstown Royal Gold, Knob Creek, and Rye. I mean, there's all kinds for all different kinds of whiskey drinkers. So
what a great idea.
Yeah. What is you guys' favorite holiday drink? I know whiskey is usually not at the top of the list. I'm an eggnog guy. But what do you guys think?
Here's the deal. This is an unexciting answer, but it's the truth. Give me some Makers on the Rocks.
Mm.
If you want to put a splash of eggnog in there.
That sounds pretty good.
A splash of eggnog. Oh.
There you go. Where's this taking place, Spencer?
This is going on at 406 Armor.
306
Armor. Excuse me, 306 Armor Road, North Kansas City, Friday, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m.
Okay, and finally today.
Up on the housetop, reindeer paws. Out jumps good old Santa Claus. Down through the chimney with lots of toys. All for the little one's Christmas joys.
Ho, ho, ho.
Oh, ho, 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 ho.
Yeah, what we got?
Hey, that's the sound you make after your favorite holiday drink. What is it? You didn't tell us.
I'll go with what you suggested.
Oh, that's a smart move.
Yeah,
that's
there
you a smart
go.
Move. Okay, so before he hits the housetops, the jolly old elf himself goes, what else but scuba diving with his penguin friends?
Standard.
It's Santa dives at the Kansas City Zoo. Be there sharp. Be late and you'll miss it. It's from 2 to 2:30.
Santa's going scuba diving?
What? Oh, yeah.
That's what we're talking about
oh,
here?
Oh, yeah. 2 to 2:30, Saturday and Sunday
at
the
zoo. Why would he do that?
Global warming knows no bounds.
He has to be out in the wind.
I have to tell you something. I don't know why anybody would dress up and put on the beard and go underwater and do that for the amusement of others. But I'm going to tell you why I think it's a good idea to go. You know how sometimes little
shark,
kids...
I bite them.
Yeah. Well, you know, little kids, you know, you've seen it. We've all seen it, right? They can become plainly anxious or even tearful when they're placed on Santa's lap, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some kids just don't like it. Well, moms and dads, uncles, aunts, etc., can try taking the little ones to a photo op with Santa that doesn't involve a screaming fit, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just show the kids this crazy Santa Claus. They're not afraid of this Santa Claus. They think he's kind of silly. They'll be tickled rather than terrified. I'm telling you, Santa is underwater and playing with penguins, not disturbing, delightful.
Got to be kidding me.
I am
there
not
we go.
Kidding. No.
At the zoo on Saturday and Sunday from 2 to 2:30, right?
Ho, ho,
ho, ho, ho. That's
H2O.
Brian McTavish, Spencer Hardwick. Happy holidays, gents. Thanks for coming in
Same
today.
To you.
Happy holidays.
Shopping for a young reader this holiday season, our friends from the Johnson County Public Library have you covered. Here are their book recommendations. Yes, books. Remember those from yesterday's show? You'll find that show at kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow, the film critics are back. I'll ask about their favorite movies of 2019. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Jamie Hobbs. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.